From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It is Super Tuesday. California joins more than a dozen other states in primary races. And if you still have an unopened ballot or you need to register, you still have time. Polls close at 8 p.m. And we do have voter guides for local and statewide races on our Insight page, as well as capradio.org. We're going to narrow in on specific races. We're going to check in with registrars in surrounding counties. And we will have some last minute tips for voters. First, we're going to get a statewide look. Joining us now is CAP Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon and Alexei Kosov, who covers the state capitol for Cal Matters. That is a nonprofit newsroom that partners with public media stations across the state. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you.
So, as state politics reporters, in the weeks leading up to the primary, what has interested each of you most about this election on March 5th? Alexei?
I think, to me, the biggest stakes are this open U.S. Senate seat. We haven't had that in a long time. And so for, you know, the voters of California now to have an opportunity to pick a candidate who will likely be in that seat for decades to come is a very big deal.
It is a once in a generation seat. How about you, Nicole?
I mean, I think also the ballot question, Prop 1, is, I mean, it's the only ballot proposition on this March primary ballot. So, you know, I think the stakes are very high there for Governor Gavin Newsom, for the legislature, who've been trying for years to address this stubborn homelessness problem. And they're really pinning this, the future of that, on this ballot proposition, which would approve $6.4 billion to build 10,000 new beds and housing units for mental health treatment. And, you know, Newsom's called it the last big piece of the puzzle. He says over the past few years, they've been working around the edges, doing all these reforms, and that he says this will tie it all together. But we've seen, you know, support for it kind of diminish in the past few weeks, and turnout is another question.
Yeah, well, let's get to turnout because, I mean, early ballots went out a month ago on February 5th. Political Data Inc. tracks ballot returns across the state. They're reporting 14% of ballots have been returned so far. And given that ballots went out a month ago, I know that the primary historically has lower turnout than the general election, but this, even taking that into consideration, this still seems like really low turnout. What does that signal to you, especially you, Alexei? You've been covering state politics now here in California for like a decade.
Yeah, I mean, this is not good, and there's a possibility that this could end up being a record low. It's still to be determined. I think a lot of people are probably scratching their heads, but certainly one idea that's been floated is that this kind of March primary is just a little too early in the year for California voters to really get engaged and start paying attention and get the information they need to care about the races that are on the ballot. You know, there's sort of that holiday hangover for the first couple weeks, and by the time people are getting their ballots in February, they may not even know what's going on. So I think candidates have been rushing in the last few weeks to try and, you know, catch people's attention and get them to fill out those ballots, and we'll see if there's sort of a surge in late participation today. And then also, I mean, the flip side of the fact that there's only one ballot measure on the ballot and only one big race and no competitive presidential primaries is that there's not a lot for people to really get invested in, even though there are so many important down ballot races. I mean, here in Sacramento, we've got a mayoral race, we've got open seats for the city council, for the legislature. So it's when there's things that are kind of less high profile, they can get lost in the shuffle when there's not those big kind of all-star battles at the top of the ticket to catch people's attention.
Nicole, what stands out to you about the turnout so far?
I think, you know, we always see a last minute rush of people like to wait till that last day. I mean, like, my house dropped our ballots off this morning. That's the norm for a lot of people. They just like to, they'd like to avoid last minute surprises. They like to procrastinate. However, 14% is very low. And I'm looking at the presidential primary turnout from the past 20 years, and it's like 47% in 2020, 48% in 2016, lower 31% in 2012, when, again, there you had a less competitive presidential choices. So, you know, I think we will see a surge, but will it be 30% of voters dropping off their ballots today? I think that remains to be seen.
Nicole, where is Governor Newsom today?
That's a good question. He typically does a public vote at the California Museum. He and the first partner will show up and cast their ballots. They decided not to do that today. And he has been out campaigning since last week for Prop 1. So maybe ran out of energy, I guess.
You know, if it passes or if it doesn't pass, what does this say, if anything, about the governor's political clout in California, Prop 1? Alexi?
I think this is a question that I'm certainly been watching, because one of the last ballot, he's somebody who's actually often tried to pass policy through ballot measures, and he's had some big successes like legal marijuana in 2016 and some gun related initiatives. But he tried a couple years ago to push through a school bond measure, and that narrowly failed. And that was kind of a big surprise. So if this were to fail, I think that would be another big hit to his political capital and question mark about how much the voters of California really trust and listen to him. That said, this one, the polling indicates it's still on track to pass. And I think that maybe speaks to the fact that on an issue like this, people are really fed up. They're looking for new solutions. They're looking for a different path forward. And maybe this is something that the governor is giving them.
Outside of the governor, Nicole, what has the political response been to Prop 1?
That is a good question. I mean, like, you have Newsom and you have the legislative Democrats on one hand really, really pushing this. And the bills in the legislature, you know, this is a ballot question for a bond, but it also includes changes to the Mental Health Services Act, which is 20 years old now. Republicans in the legislature supported that. But as you know, as we talked about, the support for Prop 1 has dwindled in the polls. It was like 66% of voters were supporting it a couple months ago. It's still at polling around 59%, so it's looking like it might pass. But it's normal for support for ballot measures and bonds to drop the closer to election you get. But you also have people questioning whether the state is spending wisely on homelessness. And I think that is a very big concern, maybe the biggest concern when it comes to Prop 1 for voters.
And the devil's in the details. And we're going to dive into Prop 1 later on in the show with our healthcare reporter for people who still need to vote and have unopened ballots. But there are also other local races in the primary. I mean, one of the big local ones in our area is Assembly District 6. That is being vacated by Kevin McCarty, who's running for Sacramento mayor. I mean, there's 10 candidates running in the primary. Nicole, who are you paying attention to in this race?
There's a ton of candidates, and it's a very crowded race. 7 Democrats, 2 Republicans, 1 Peace and Freedom candidate. And the interesting thing about this race is that many of these candidates are already involved in Sacramento's Capitol community. They are working as advocates. They've worked for state lawmakers. They are elected to the local school board or the SMUD board. There's also a lot of outside money that's flown into this race from special interest groups, and that's supporting 2 candidates in particular, Maggie Krell, who's a Democrat working as a deputy attorney general, and Carlos Marquez, who's the executive director of the ACLU of California. So really curious to see if that spending works to elevate either or both of those 2 candidates to the general election, especially in such a crowded field where, you know, breaking through is really what matters for this primary.
Yeah, Alexi, what stands out to you about this race?
I mean, I think in a district like this one, which is overwhelmingly Democratic, I think the biggest question to me is whether 1 or 2 Democrats advance to the top 2, because those 2 Republicans on the ballot could split what's a pretty small amount of registered Republicans in the district and then allow for a very competitive runoff in November. Whereas if only 1 Democrat makes it through because they sort of push ahead of this splintered field, then they pretty much have it sewn up in November. And a lot of Sacramentans are going to be represented by someone they probably didn't even open their ballot to look at this March.
Yeah, I know for the mayor and also city council districts, like local races, some they can be decided on the primary if a candidate gets more than 50% of the vote. Is that the same case for state assembly or state senate, or is it a top 2?
It's a top 2 system, but what happens is that there can be some kind of gamesmanship sometimes with the partisan breakdown of a district. When you're looking at places like the Central Valley, which are very purple and have a very even Republican-Democratic split, then they're very competitive into November. But a lot of other places are drawn so safe for one party or the other that they can end up getting decided in the primary because only one really truly viable candidate makes it through.
You know, Nicole, when it comes to state Senate, I mean, Sacramento voters may not be weighing in on state Senate races, but there are neighboring counties. You have Yolo County. You also have San Joaquin County. What stands out to you about these districts and the races that are happening within them?
Yeah, the two Senate districts that kind of border Sacramento County to the west and to the south are represented by state senators that are term limited. So they're leaving. So you have Democrat Bill Dodd of Napa. And this is a primary, again, where there's five candidates. It's a solidly blue district. It'll be interesting to see if there's three Democrats running, if there are two Democrats that are in these top two. I expect there to be because they've raised a ton of money between the three Democrats and the two Republican challengers haven't raised as much. And then in the fifth Senate district, the incumbent Susan Eggman of Stockton is being termed out. And this is also an interesting race. There's some big names going up against each other. Originally, Edith Villapudua, who's the wife of Stockton Assembly member Carlos Villapudua, was going to run for this seat. The couple decided to switch so that Carlos is running for the Senate. His wife is now running for his Assembly seat. Also at the last minute, former Congressman Jerry McNerney jumped into this race. So these two Democrats have raised a ton of money. They are going up against each other. There's a GOP candidate. We'll see if that Republican candidate, Jim Shoemaker, is a spoiler in this race. But that'll be an interesting one for the primary and into November.
Yeah, that definitely is an interesting race. And Alexi, this isn't the first time that people that live within the same household or family members are running for elected office.
No, absolutely. I think there's a long history. You can see at the Capitol of parents and children, married couples who even serve at the same time in different houses of the legislature, siblings. Actually, right now, there's a pair of sisters who are both in the legislature, and there's another pair of sisters who are trying to get elected to the legislature. So you could say in California, politics is definitely a family business sometimes.
So in my district, I live in the city. And so what I'm voting, I have just been getting so many mailers at my house. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, I should get a bookshelf for all of the mailers. Are mailers effective today? I mean, I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this, because, I mean, it's really a lot, both for and against candidates as well.
I mean, sometimes it's not necessarily the message that's in the mailer as much as the repetition of getting a mailer over and over again and seeing someone's name and just having them stick in your brain so that when you go to your ballot, you look and you look for them. Certainly, that's the idea behind a lot of these kind of low-tech campaign techniques, also like yard signs. I mean, there's an argument that that's not necessarily the most effective use of money, but maybe if you see someone's name enough time, you look them up or you look them on your ballot. Mm.
It is interesting. There's so much money spent on mailers, and nobody really knows how effective they are. Like, I don't think there's been a ton of research into whether they can change anybody's mind. In fact, I've heard people say the opposite and say they're so turned off by the amount of mailers they get for a certain candidate that they don't want to support that candidate.
Yeah.
But again, we don't have a lot of research into
this. Yeah, it's just anecdotal. I know for myself personally, I just think like, oh my gosh, this is wasteful. It's just a lot of paper.
The thing I always actually do when I get them before I toss them in the recycling is I go to see who paid for them, because it's always very interesting to me to see who's so invested in a candidate that they actually feel compelled to pay for this mailer. I mean, it says a lot about relationships and the values of a candidate that they might not state on their website or in the voter guide.
I want to move to the Senate race because, as you mentioned, this is a once-in-a-generation seat. You do have Democrat Adam Schiff, also a Congress member, and Republican Steve Garvey, who doesn't have political experience. I mean, according to polling, at least, they're in a statistical tie. You also have Congress members Katie Porter and Barbara Lee. What stands out to you about how the polling has shifted in the final days and weeks leading up to March 5th? Alexi?
Yeah, well, I mean, this was a race that for a long time people were wondering whether there would be a Democratic runoff essentially in November between Adam Schiff and Katie Porter, two very high profile kind of name Congress people. But Adam Schiff has leaned in hard over the last few weeks on a strategy of running ads that contrast him against Steve Garvey, the Republican candidate, and in doing so kind of elevate Steve Garvey's profile. Garvey has not raised that much money himself. He has not been on the campaign trail that much himself, but he's seen his polling numbers rise and rise and rise and rise, consolidating conservative supporters in California. And so it's been very effective for Adam Schiff to essentially turn it into a race that he's almost guaranteed to win in November.
How does a low turnout benefit a certain candidate, or does it, or even a certain political party by having a low voter turnout?
Well, I think in this case, it would definitely benefit Steve Garvey if the turnout continues to be this low. I mean, the other thing about early voting and turnout is candidates who vote early are more likely to be older. They're more likely to be Republican or conservative leaning. They're more likely to be white voters. And those are the type of voters that are going to support a candidate like Steve Garvey. You have younger voters, voters of color, more Democrats, and Democratic leaning independents are going to vote later. So, you know, again, we don't know if Katie Porter will push through and get enough of those late voting voters to actually turn out and support her. So, yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about having it early. We've talked about turnout being low. And I think all of these things are interesting, you know, variables in this election equation this year.
In the last minute or so that we have, I do want to get to the governor. Obviously, is not running. The governor is rounding out his final term, but his actions and what he is connected to can shape races. So this is why I want to touch on what's been called like Panera Gate. Alexi, can you talk about the controversy it really surrounds over this $20 an hour minimum wage hike that is coming to fast food restaurants in just, I think, a few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big deal that was made at the Capitol last year. It was supposed to settle this tension that's existed between unions and the fast food industry at the Capitol for many years. But in fact, it's actually spurred forward all kinds of new political tensions, including a new PAC by franchise owners of these fast food restaurants who felt left out of the deal. And they're now putting a bunch of money into opposing candidates who supported that deal, including here in Sacramento, Kevin McCarthy, who's running for mayor. They've actually been behind a lot of the mailers and anti-Kevin McCarthy ads that you may have seen. So this is a trend that you're going to continue to see in local races as these business people try and sort of assert their political muscle.
And the reason why it's, how is Panera involved in this? Because that has really received the most coverage in just the last few days.
Right. Well, that's a little bit separate from the election. But the big question I think everyone is trying to unravel right now is whether Gavin Newsom, who does have a longstanding business relationship with a franchise owner who owns many Panera restaurants, actually requested language in the bill that would have exempted Panera through these very technical definitions about what constitutes a fast food restaurant from the $20 minimum wage hike. As this controversy has exploded in the last week, the governor has come out and said, that's absurd, that's not what happened, and Panera is not even exempt. And so now everybody's trying to piece through why this language was even in there in the first place, who did what lobbying and why, and what the ramifications of that are going to be going forward.
At the end of the day, that's why you should vote for the primary, because there are some state offices in both the Assembly and the Senate. I mean, they craft these policies and this legislation. It's very important, and you still have time. Alexi and Nicole, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That is Cap Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon and Alexi Kossoff, who covers the state capitol for Cal Matters. Up next, we're going to dive more into Proposition 1 on the ballot, and we're going to get a look at important local races in Sacramento. And for those of you who still have an unopened ballot, we will have last-minute tips from the California Voter Foundation. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're continuing conversations surrounding the California primary. Voters have until 8 p.m. tonight to cast their ballot. If you still haven't opened yours yet, perhaps you even want to register. We'll have some last-minute tips from the California Voter Foundation in just a minute. But first, we're going to dive into one of the biggest statewide decisions on the ballot, Prop 1. Joining us now is CAP Radio's healthcare reporter, Kate Wolf, with an explainer. Hey, Kate.
Hi, Vicky.
Okay, so you joined us not too long ago about Prop 1. I mean, this is a proposition on the voter guide that spans like 60 or 70 pages. It is a monster. It can be complicated. That can be difficult for voters. So remind us what it would do.
Prop 1 would do two things. It would allow the state to borrow $6.4 billion by selling bonds to build 4,500 supportive housing units and 6,800 slots for mental health and substance use treatment. The second thing it would do would be change the terms of the Mental Health Services Act. That's a law that voters passed in 2004. It currently allocates money from a tax on millionaires toward mental health treatment in counties. Counties currently spend it on programs they've developed. This would change it so more goes to housing and specific supports for people who are the most mentally ill and drug addicted, less towards existing outpatient and crisis services.
So when we go a little bit deeper, who is backing Prop 1 and who is against Prop 1?
This is really Governor Gavin Newsom's baby. He is the biggest supporter. Some of his allies, as well as big city mayors, are also for it. Supporters include also health plans, hospital and firefighters associations, and the National Alliance on Mental Illness in California. Opponents are some Republican officials, taxpayers associations, and also some progressive opponents include Cal Voices, Disability Rights California, and ACLU Northern California. And they highlight that some of the money in the bond could go toward involuntary treatment, like acute psychiatric hospitals.
And there has been polling in the months leading up to the primary about, you know, how voters feel about Prop 1 in California. I mean, how has that evolved? And really, Governor Newsom has been campaigning for Prop 1. Has that been effective?
Right. So it has shown that voters are slightly less likely to vote for Prop 1. Governor Newsom has really come out with his latest polls to rally support. I think the governor's main messages were that this would help veterans. Certainly a number, certainly a big chunk of the money goes towards housing and treatment for veterans. And his tagline, treatment not tents, has been, I think, effective. But nobody that I talked to today at the polls mentioned veterans when I asked about Prop 1. So I'm not sure that message has really stuck. But I do think his linking this to a lack of community funding after deinstitutionalization in the 50s and 60s has made sense for a lot of people. That has helped people understand, oh, this is why we're in the situation we're in with drug use and mental illness on the street. And I think for a lot of people that resonates and they believe it's time to reinvest in treatment.
I mean, researching this prop is far from leisure reading. And I've said that before. So when you went out this morning, you're talking to people who are out casting their ballots. What did they have to say about Prop 1?
I was in Midtown this morning, and I'll say I was really impressed with all the voters I talked to who showed up in Midtown. This is a super complicated situation, and I found that most people had a good grasp on it. There was some misinformation. Some people were thinking more money was going to states. Some people were thinking this would increase involuntary treatment by a large amount. But in general, you know, the first question I asked is, what do you know about Prop 1? And a lot of people had a clear idea.
Did people give any indication about how they were going to be voting? And you actually have some sound from voters as well.
Yes. So I got a huge range of responses. People really filled me in on what they were thinking. It's a little windy. It was a little windy out there. So there's some wind sound. But here's some of what people said.
In general, when there is an increase, a bond or a tax measure or whatever, I don't support it, primarily because of fiscal mismanagement that exists every day, all day, in this thing called government. And giving them more money is not going to solve any problems at all, irrespective of the validity of the issue.
Sounds, you know, on its face like kind of a good idea, but yeah, the idea of committing people involuntarily didn't sit right, so I think we're both planning to vote no.
Yeah.
I thought it was time for reform. None of the counties are able to operate with like a cohesive way to treat mental health, and none of them work together. Like none of the departments, they're all kind of siloed away from each other. So I thought that if we're going to take a look at reforming it, we better do it soon.
Did you have any reservations about Prop 1?
Yeah, the cost.
I know that it's an important tool for California to address a lot of the longstanding problems. It's not the solution, but it's a kind of a piece of a tool in a toolbox, so I'm supporting it.
I'll be honest, I typically vote no on propositions just because they typically have unintended consequences. But I think back to Prop 13, which was years and years and years ago when I was a child, but I still grew up with a lot of the consequences, with my father having been a school teacher at the time and seeing kind of the erosion of our public school systems and you know, kind of what that did to the public school systems.
So that was Brian Wagoner, Tom and Alex Lawrence, Andrew Mendoza, Angela Tate, and Vicky Wells, all live in Midtown.
Mm. Finally, Kate, we touched upon, you know, polling, but, you know, when you actually look at the most recent polling, which I think is from this month, what does it say?
Yeah, March 1st poll from Berkeley's Institute of Governmental Studies showed that even in late February, they talked to people in late February, 16% of likely voters were undecided about the measure. And actually, some folks I talked to said, I'm going to make a decision in the poll, right? You know, while I'm filling out my ballot. So they still were not decided. 50% in that poll said they were likely yes, 34% a likely no. That was tending along party lines. Democrats more likely to vote yes, Republicans more likely to vote no. It's different from what we saw from the Public Policy Institute of California in December, when 2 in 3 likely voters polled were supportive of Prop 1. So there is a slight decline in prospective support. But the measure needs a simple majority of the vote to pass. So we'll see.
And we're talking at 12:30. So there's still 7.5 hours. Thanks, Kate.
Yeah, thank you.
That is Cap Radio's healthcare reporter, Kate Wolf. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. We just finished getting a broad statewide look at races for the California primary, but there are also hyper-local races that have a big impact on neighborhoods. I want to bring in Cap Radio Sacramento education reporter Srishti Prabha, who was also out talking to voters this morning. Hey, Srishti.
Hi, Vicky.
Okay, so you were at a polling place at the Greater Sacramento Urban League in Del Paso Heights, speaking with voters. How was it out there?
Yes, I was out there with my fellow reporter, Tony Rodriguez. We talked to voters and voting site workers to get a pulse of what the community, and specifically communities of color, are feeling about the primaries. And the primaries usually have a lower voter turnout for younger voters and voters of color.
Yeah, and we were just talking about ballot returns so far for this specific primary, and it is a low turnout so far. That can change. What is the approach to engage and for outreach for younger voters and voters of color?
Yeah, sometimes I think outreach doesn't look as intentional as we would think, right? Some of the people that I was talking to at the voting site were just people who were working there, and they felt their presence, the fact that they've been doing it for so many years, their familiar face, that could be something that brings people out to vote, especially in a community like Del Paso Heights, where people are very, very invested in their communities. So I spoke to someone named Patricia Galindo, who is a clerk working at the polling center in Del Paso Heights, and she's been doing this work for years.
I've been doing it since I was 18. I am now 39. You know, at my job, a lot of the kids that I work with, they had never voted before. So being able to speak to them like, hey, you know, you should really come in, like register to vote, do this. And I've even had people like my niece, I got her to work as a clerk. It's just fun. It's a fun experience.
Yeah, maybe once you're a clerk, you know, you have to vote. Yeah. So that's a great way to do that. And then I also spoke to Gloriana Jackson, who is also a clerk at the site and a younger voter who was interested in getting young voters to vote in the primaries and wanted to be that familiar face.
People in my age group don't really come and vote. They're not really aware of what's going on and how this affects us. So that's why I try to give back. That's why I try to be a friendly face and get the word out that we need to vote. Because when I talk to people, I say, did you vote? And then I say, well, I haven't either. We could do it together. Or, you know, here's a book. Read it and just let them know you're not alone.
both are residents of Del Paso Heights and are really community driven and focused. Yeah.
I love that from like a new generation of someone volunteering at a poll site to someone who's been doing it for like 21 years. Yeah. And I know for me and my friends, we usually have like informational parties and about our ballots. So it makes it fun. You know, you can do it over breaking bread and dinner. Mm-hmm. As an education reporter, you have joined us multiple times to talk about school boards, the importance of school boards and races. Did you see people interested in voting on local school boards?
Vicky, you know, I had to ask. I love school boards, and I think school boards control the state of education. So I can never emphasize this topic enough. And so luckily, some of the people that I did speak to, or the ones that had it on their ballot, because it wasn't on all their ballots, were actually really invested in the power of school boards. One such voter was a Grant Union High School staff member, Danny Augustine.
The school board is important to me because that's how some of the policies and procedures are put into the schools, and it's important to what they pass and what they don't pass. I'm an active member at the high school, so I also need to know what's going on at my high school through the board and through the school.
And then I spoke to an older voter, 68-year-old Kenneth Buchanan, who doesn't have kids in the system but cares about education and the need to exercise your right to vote.
I think all of the elections are important, period, especially the primary election. I think the school board is influential in what type of books go into the school and what type of social norms go into the school.
Yeah, and these down ballot races, although so important to communities and neighborhoods, you know, oftentimes they can be really difficult to research, and maybe you don't even know until you open your ballot that like, oh, there's a school board race. So what local school board races are on the ballot?
Yeah, that's very true, Vicky. So this time we have the Sacramento County Office of Education's board races, which are in Area 4, 5, 6, and 7. Area 4 has 5 candidates running, and Area 6 has 2. The other are all uncontested. Twin Rivers has races in Area 1, 3, 5, and 7, and only Area 7 is contested, which makes me question, why are they all so uncontested?
Yeah, maybe that can be your next story.
Yeah, exactly.
You could join us on Insight, yeah. Giving us some more perspective. I mean, finally, what are some of the big difficulties that you've learned when talking to voters when it comes to actually making a decision on the school board?
It's hard, right? It's one of the things that you said. There's not enough information. Candidates can be pretty unresponsive. They might not even have a website. So one of the things, even as a reporter, it's pretty hard to just get in contact and get information and be able to make an informed vote. And many of times these people hold these positions for many years uncontested and choose not to engage in the interviewing process to not get bad press. So if you see an uncontested race, I think you should always question why that exists.
Srishti, thank you.
Thank you, Vicky.
Srishti Prabhupada is CAP Radio's Sacramento education reporter. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you still have questions on how or where to vote, our next guest will walk you through some of the most common issues when it comes to voting. Kim Alexander is the president and founder of the nonpartisan California Voter Foundation. Welcome back to Insight, Kim. You're muted, Kim. There we go.
Got it. Hi, Vicky.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Good afternoon. Okay, it is 12:40 in the afternoon. What is your main message to people who have an unopened ballot right now?
What are you waiting for? Open up your ballot, get it out, take a look at it, vote on the contest you want to vote on, take it to a voting site or a drop box today. Most of the drop boxes are open till 8 p.m. in Sacramento, but not all of them. So you might want to check your voter information guide or the information that came in your mail envelope from the county elections office and make sure you go to a site that's open at the time that you're going. You can drop off your ballot at any voting site. And you don't have to vote on everything on the ballot. Your team did a great job explaining some of these really complicated measures. I know one thing that keeps people from voting is, you know, they don't want to make the wrong choice. And so, vote on one way on something and find out later they wish they'd vote opposite. So if you're not sure, vote on the things you feel comfortable about and skip the other ones. The point is to be a voter.
What if you haven't registered yet?
You can still vote today. You can go to a vote center. It's called conditional registration. You'll fill out a form. They'll also invite you to fill out a ballot at the same time. And your ballot will go inside an envelope and your elections office will verify that you didn't vote somewhere else and that you're eligible to vote in that county before they take that ballot out and they count it. And those get counted last, but they do get counted most most provisional and conditional ballots in the state get counted.
Hmm. You also have a voter guide on your website. We have that linked on our Insight page. What are some of the most common questions that you're working to answer for voters across the state?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question because we actually looked at our usage stats this week to see, you know, what is getting the most hits. And the thing people are looking at more than anything else is how do I correct a mistake on my ballot? You know, people fill out, you know, a choice. They realize later they wanted to vote differently. They don't want to try to get a new ballot. And so every county's instructions might not be exactly the same, but what our county elections office says in the voter guide is just put an X through the choice that you made that you didn't mean to make and make the choice that you want and draw an arrow to it or asterisk it. Just note it that that's what your preference. Don't write your name down or anything like that. Don't sign it. But just make it really clear what you intended to do. And your elections office has teams of people who will remake ballots that come in that have these errors on them so that your votes will be counted accurately in the scanner.
Hmm. Another piece of the ballot that might catch some voters off guard, it's the Senate race, because there's actually two different categories when it comes to U.S. Senate candidates. One is for the full term. The other is for the remaining term through January of 2025. Does it concern you that maybe someone might just select their candidate for one of them and think, OK, I'm done, and not actually make the selection for both of them?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not happy with what we're doing with these special vacancy elections. This is the second election in a row where we've had a little bit of a term left. And by the time the election's all said and done, there's only a couple weeks left in that remainder of the term. And I know this law requiring these elections was passed with the best intentions, but I think it's just making things more difficult and confusing for voters, making our ballots longer than they need to be. You can vote in both those contests. The main contest is for the full six-year term. That's the contest that has lots of candidates on it. And then there below it, at least on my ballot, you know, is this special vacancy contest that only has seven candidates on it. And you can vote in that one as well. You can vote for the same candidate you voted for the full term, or you can vote for a different candidate in that race. But whoever wins that contest is only going to be our U.S. senator for a couple of weeks by the time the election's all said and done.
As you know, ballots went out a month ago. And as of this morning, according to Political Data, Inc., 14% of registered voters have sent back their ballots. You've been involved in elections going back many election cycles. Does a 14% ballot return so far today for the primary, is that concerning to you?
It always concerns me when people choose not to vote. But I also know that, you know, this is an election where we have a presidential primary that's not as contested as the last two were in California, where we saw pretty robust turnout. But, you know, it's on the bigger scale, Vicky, it's important to remember that, you know, most Californians aren't voting, period. When you look at everyone who's eligible to vote, we sent out 22 million ballots. There's millions more Californians who are eligible but not even registered to vote. And so, you know, what would it be like if 22 or 25 million people voted in this state? It would be amazing. And the problem is that, you know, people who are young and not courted by campaigns and don't see the issues they care about, they are not engaged in the process, so they don't vote. And then because they're not voting, politicians don't try to appease them and speak to them and bring them in. So we have this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that we need to break. And it's really important. I loved you were saying earlier about having ballot parties. You know, I loved hearing the reporters on the street talking to people about Prop 1. Those of us who are engaged, it's really our duty to reach out to people around us who maybe are confused by this process and give them a hand. You know, I often ask people when they don't vote, you know, why are you not voting? And they're so afraid of being judged and they feel ashamed about it. And the truth is that a lot of us don't feel confident when we vote, and we don't like to do things we feel we're not good at. So we need to make our ballots easier to understand. We need to make the process simpler so there's not so many, you know, things that you have to make sure you get right for your ballot to count. And we need to have more sympathy for people who are bewildered by all of this. The important thing is to be a voter. It's not to have the right answer for every question on the ballot. It's not a test. You want you and people in your demographic to be in the voting process. So politicians have to listen to what you care about.
Kim, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Vicki.
Kim Alexander is the president and founder of the nonpartisan California Voter Foundation. Still ahead, we're going to check in with our local election offices in Sacramento, Yolo, and Placer counties. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We have dedicated this hour to the California primary. We just heard from the California Voter Foundation about last-minute tips for those who still need to vote or even register. But the actual voting process, it varies across the state. So we're going to close the election, or this show, with election offices in Sacramento, Placer, and Yolo counties. Joining us now are Kenneth Kasparis with the Sacramento County Registrar's Office, Jesse Salinas with Yolo County Registrar of Voters, and Ryan Ronco with the Placer County Registrar of Voters. Welcome. We know it's a very busy day. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon, Vicki.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking the time. Well, Ken, I want to start with you, and I'm going to ask all three of you this. We've been talking this hour that ballot returns for the primary so far are indicating a low voter turnout. You still got another 7 hours before polls close. And it really can vary locally. That is a statewide look. So it is preliminary. But in Sacramento County, how is voter turnout shaping up? What are you seeing in Sac County?
We are seeing that voter turnout is still pretty low. As of about 2 hours ago, we were at 17.6%. We've had 153,000 ballots returned so far. To compare that to the last presidential primary, the day before election day, we had about 221,000 ballots. So we're significantly behind where we were in that primary election.
Jesse, how about you in Yolo County?
Well, thank you, Vicki. We are also pretty low. We are actually trending about 5.5% above the statewide average. Last night, the state indicated about a 16% turnout thus far, and we were running about 21%. In fact, since then, I can tell you things have picked up a bit. We've had a steady flow, and we're actually running about 23% right now. It's starting to pick up, and plus we just picked up 3,500 vote-by-mails through our post office that's right across the street from our office here. So people definitely waited till the last day to start casting their votes. You can see that happening today.
Yeah, and people have options. I mean, you can go in person the old-fashioned way and fill out your ballot. You could drop it off at a ballot box as well, or just, you know, put it in snail mail. Ryan, what is it looking like in Placer County?
Hi, Vicki. Yeah, same as what Jesse was talking about. I know that the last time I looked, we were around 20% turnout this morning. I would imagine that we're probably trending like Yolo County, around 22, 23% right now. And we're getting a lot of voters that are coming into our vote centers who want to actually cast their vote by mail ballot there at the vote center, just be able to come in and watch that ballot be scanned right in front of them. And that's pretty exciting for them.
Yeah. I mean, Placer County, your county is not only large, but it does cut into the foothills and in the Sierra. And there was a blizzard and a winter storm that really impacted people who live in these communities. How did the winter storm over the weekend impact people's ability to cast their vote?
It was definitely something to contend with. I have to commend our vote center workers up in the Alta area, up in Lake Tahoe. They did not let that storm stop them from opening on time and having the vote centers open the entire time. And we did have ballots that were being dropped off at drop boxes, so we were collecting those. The big problem was getting over Donner Summit, and we were able to have those days where even our sheriff's office felt a little concerned about travel over the summit. Well, they locked those ballots up in one of the jail cells at the jail up in North Lake Tahoe, and we had a camera on it the entire time, so we were able to watch those ballots, make sure that nothing funny happened there.
Yeah, and this isn't the first time Placer County has dealt with weather, you know, especially when it comes to the primary. I mean, if someone right now is calling your office in Placer County, they want to vote, but maybe they're impacted by weather, they have some questions, what services can you do? How can you help guide them?
Well, we have a lot of options. All counties do, and really any of the Sierra counties will be able to tell those voters about their resources. It might be remote accessible vote by mail. It might be calling on us to have somebody deliver a ballot to them if they're shut in, but we can get to them. It also might just be calling our resources to make sure that their street is plowed so that they can be able to get out and get to that vote center. But we need to hear from them so that we can be able to give them the best option for making their voice heard.
Jesse, in Yolo County, what are some of the questions your office has received about Election Day? And also, if you've had any issues so far?
Well, so far things have been going very smoothly. So we're thankful for that. The storms here haven't been quite where they were up in Placer, Nevada. So we're thankful for that. Really, the key question that people are asking is, will my vote count? And how does the process work? So we've provided information to guide people not only on Election Day, but even afterwards to describe to them the post-election process and the review that we go through to certify an election. So those are the key questions that we're going through and explaining to folks.
You mentioned that your ballot returns so far are skewing higher than statewide numbers. I mean, it's still low, but it is skewing higher. That is in the right direction. What do you attribute that to, Jesse?
Well, one of the things we've seen a trend. In 2016, we were pretty much aligned with the state average. But since then, we've just, I think, done a lot of outreach in the community, and we've had success with those outreach efforts. We've also engaged the university at a high level as well. And in fact, they won a national award between 2016 and 2020 for the highest percentage increase of a university nationally against 300 other universities. So there is high engagement here in Yolo County, and voters are engaged, and they continue to get more engaged, I think, with each election.
Kenneth, in Sacramento County, have there been any issues so far? And what are some of the questions that you're receiving on Election Day?
Thankfully, we haven't had any issues so far. I'm knocking on wood. We have received a lot of questions about no party preference. That's always a bit confusing for voters in a presidential primary. We also receive questions as simple as, when is Election Day? How late can I make it out to a vote center? What do I have to do with my pink envelope? In Sacramento County, our envelopes are pink. So we just tell them Election Day is March 5th. You have until 8 p.m. As long as you're in line by 8 p.m., you can cast your vote. And you need to make sure that that pink envelope is signed if you're dropping it off at a ballot drop box or putting it in the mail.
Any last minute do's or don'ts for voters, Ken?
Yeah, so the do's are get out there and vote. Do get out there and vote. And we also want to make sure that people who go to our vote centers get out there early. A lot of people tend to wait until the last minute on Election Day to vote. And that's when you'll see the longest lines. So it's getting a little late to get out there early. But the earlier you could get out there in the day, the better.
Mm. Jesse, you know, we got about 7 hours until polls close and only about, 60 seconds left in the show. Do you have a final message for people in Yolo County?
Sure, absolutely. I do encourage folks to track down all the different options that are available to them, not just vote centers, but official drop boxes. We have them throughout Yolo County, 15 different of them. People love going into the stores because we have a wonderful partnership with Nugget Markets to be able to shop and drop off your ballots. But we have 24/7 boxes. Again, there's multiple options that they can drop off their ballots. Encourage them to do that as soon as possible, not wait till the last minute, as Ken said.
Yeah. Ryan, we got about 20 seconds left. I'll leave the last message with you and Placer County voters.
You know, we're just super excited that people are taking to these vote centers. I just want to remind voters that you're not assigned to a particular vote center. So if you see a line in front of one, well, you know what? There's probably another one that doesn't have a line. So don't give up. Go ahead and go down the street and see if you can find another vote center where the line is shorter.
Well, Ryan, Jesse, and Kenneth, thank you so much. I know it is this is like your Super Bowl. So thank you very much for taking the time this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kenneth Kasparis is with the Sacramento County Registrar's Office. Jesse Salinas is with the Yolo County Registrar of Voters. And Ryan Ronco is with the Placer County Registrar of Voters. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests and voter guides at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email, insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producer Sarit Lashinsky and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer and audio engineer is Chris Feltz. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We are going to catch you back here today. Once polls close, we will be live again starting at 7 and 8 p.m. See you soon.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.